there once again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where today we'll get the straight story from Adam Long, who recently set a PGA Tour record that is not likely to be broken anytime soon. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with my dear friend Bob Bupka. And Bob, the calendar shows December should be a quieter time in golf, but we've got the return of Tiger. We've got the next whereabouts of John Rahm, whether to live or not to live. And we've got the USGA and the RNA apparently are going to look at rolling back the golf ball for all players. Much to discuss as we head into a really nice discussion we had with Adam Long.
Well, you're so right, Kelly, because normally the month of December, kind of quiet, you know, players are taking time off before they go to the Century, you know, tournament over there in Maui, which is an outstanding event, and congratulations to the Century people. Boy, they know how to put on a tournament. And if you have an opportunity, January, I think, 4th it begins, but you can go over there a little early to Maui and get up and close and personal to the best golfers in the world. There are not huge crowds. Galleries are, you know, very welcome, and the charities over there in Maui certainly benefit. But you're right on the money. Lots going on in the month of December. We're going to get to some of those topics today.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to everybody hearing from Adam Long, who now holds the PGA Tour record, 69 consecutive fairways hit over three events. I had the opportunity to play with him last week, and I can promise you this guy knows how to knock it down the middle. We'll get to Adam in a little bit. Bob, I watched some of Tiger playing at the Hero, his event in the Bahamas. He did pretty well. Obviously, he 18th out of 20th, at least on the surface, doesn't look great. But for a guy who hadn't played in a long time, he looked pretty solid, all things considered, to me at least.
Well, I didn't come away with that opinion. Matter of fact, days 3 and 4 almost saw what resembled the beginning of a limp. So he says he's perfect. I detect a little bit in his walking. That's the easiest golf course they'll ever play as far as walking, extremely flat. When you get to the, you know, he said he's going to play the majors. You know, there's a lot of elevation. I mean, even at Augusta National, I mean, that's extremely difficult to walk. So as much as I would love to see Tiger back at the top of the game, I'm holding back my judgment just a little bit. He's 48 years old. It's remarkable what he's been through. But is he back, and you know, completely? I would rate him at about 60% on what I saw of his play down in the Bahamas in the his own event.
I think that's fair. He has said that he his goal would be to play once a month, with obviously April in Augusta, the first big major event. He'll probably play his own event out in Los Angeles. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler won that event, by the way. All right. So first of all, let's hear what Scheffler, who kind of got lost in the whole thing, in my opinion, with Tiger dominating, but Scheffler played great. Let's hear what Scottie Scheffler had to say from winning at the Hero World Challenge.
I'm very proud of how I played today. You know, Teddy and I did a good job out there, staying patient, kept the ball in play, gave myself a lot of looks, and I didn't feel like I gave the rest of the field much of, I don't know, much of a chance is the right word, but like I didn't make any bogeys, and so there wasn't a ton of, mistakes for them to kind of use as momentum. It was more of a make them come and catch me kind of day, and I did a really good job of not trying to force things, not trying to do anything outside my comfort zone, and I just played solid most of the day and made some two good birdies on 14, 15, and then finished it off nicely.
And now let's hear what Tiger had to say.
I said on Tuesday, I'm curious what this is going to look like. I haven't done it in a while. I haven't done it with my ankle the way it is now. And I was excited to each and every day to kind of get through it and kind of start piecing rounds together again. I mean, I haven't done this in a long time, so it was fun to feel that again. Every day I got faster into the round. You know, the first day it took me a while to get a handle on it. Second day was faster. Today was right away. And that's, eventually, you know, when I play on a regular basis, that's normally how it is. It takes me, you know, during warm up before I get a feel for the round. And I'll be honest with you, that first day took me a while. I think the best part of the week is the way I drove it. I drove it on pretty much a string all week. Granted, these fairways are big, and I felt like I had my ball speed up, which was nice. What I've been working on is right there, and just maybe just tighten up a little bit.
You know, Bob, so much of the discussion during the Hero World Challenge was about a guy who didn't even play in the event. The John Rahm situation with LIV Golf has been building, you know, for the past week or so. There's, again, a lot of money being thrown out there. I suppose that later this week, he will probably announce that he's going to join LIV. I feel resigned to the whole thing. I feel a little numb to the whole thing. The numbers, to me, I can't relate to. I would be sad to see John Rahm go. But perhaps if this is what is needed to get these two sides to some sort of an agreement, maybe that's what's necessary. Again, I can't blame the guy. If somebody offered me that outrageous amount of money, I would take it, no matter what he said in the past. And golf is just, to me, at the highest level in such an unusual spot right now, Bob.
Well, you bring up an excellent point there, Kelly. Possibly, if John Rahm goes, they decide, hey, enough is enough. Let's work out something together. Get everybody back onto the playing field so that fans, and that's who I'm concerned with, the general public, I mean, the general public, myself included, I can't relate to what $600 million will do for you. And it doesn't help just John Rahm. It helps John Rahm's children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, and on and on. Probably 20 generations of Rahms would benefit at the minimum from $600 million. But, you know, it sounds strange when you hear it initially. And that was my reaction. Wow, this is going to bring these guys further apart. But if you pause and reflect a little bit, maybe it's a step that's going to bring them closer together. And that's what I sincerely hope for.
You and me both. I think a lot of people too. Golf is not big enough, Bob, on a weekend and week out basis. If you have a division of the best players and you're not seeing the best players competing against each other, if it's only four times a year at the four major championships, in my opinion, that's not good at all. And people will, it's the old thing, you know, what's good for the game, what's not good for the game. I don't think that that's good for the game at all, nor do I at all think this discussion and what appears to be reality of the United States Golf Association and the Royal and Ancient deciding to, quote, roll the ball back for all players. I mean, the talk had been for some time, and I understand it. I do, in terms of the elite player, and maybe some golf courses have become, they simply hit the ball too far. I get it. But Bob, let me just give myself as an example. I'll be 63 at the end of this month. It's December 5th as we record this. I'm a 5.9 index. If I hit the ball well off the tee, if I hit it really hard, I'll hit it 265 yards. Why in the world do I want to have a situation where I'm hitting it 260 yards or 255 yards and my index goes up and the game becomes harder for me? How in the world the powers that be at the USGA and the RNA could think that for the millions of recreational golfers, the weekend golfers, that any of this would make any sense to roll their, to essentially make the game harder completely confounds me. I have no idea the thought process on that.
Well, Kelly, the way I look at it, it's the mystique. I think one of the real charms of professional golf and amateur golf and golfers like yourself, you know, you can't simulate playing in a football game. You can't simulate playing in a baseball game. But you can simulate playing in a golf tournament because you got the same equipment, you're hitting the same ball, and there's a sense of accomplishment that'll be eliminated. As soon as you have a good round, what kind of round did you have? Did you use the rollback ball or not the rollback ball? And that opens up another can of worms. I don't know if there's a happy medium. I don't know personally if I were given the choice now of rolling the ball back or not rolling the ball back. The only thing I can do is Jack Nicklaus has been a proponent of rolling the ball back for the last 20 years. And I say to myself, well, if he thinks it's a good idea, far be it from me to think that it's a bad one.
I'm in agreement with Tiger on this. Bifurcation, which means simply that you have two sets of rules, makes the most sense. Have it for the elite player. And again, I don't know if the PGA Tour would want to do it, but if you want to put it a rule in place for the PGA Tour, the LPGA, the very, very best, where their ball is, quote, you know, a little bit limited from what they have now based on some golf courses becoming obsolete, whatever. Okay, I get it. Just leave the rest of us alone so we can play this game and love this game and not feel like there's a – well, look, I never liked the long putter, Bob. I got it as far as it was, if you held it up against your sternum, that it may have given you an unfair advantage. I think it affected so few people, but again, it took it away from a lot of everyday golfers. That was a terrible decision to get rid of that, to force people. And it hurt a lot of players on the PGA Tour. Keegan Bradley is an example. I don't see any benefit to major changes like this in a game that continues to grow in popularity. It only puts up barriers.
All right, answer me this, Kelly Elvin. If they roll back the ball, what does a collegiate player play? Does he play the rolled back ball, or does he play the professional ball because that's what he wants to be, is a professional?
It's a great question. It gets into a nuance there that I can't answer, but you're right on, and I know where you're going. I don't have an adequate response for that, but that player certainly playing NCAA Division I golf, man, woman, whatever, that player is aspiring, yes. It could be that it affects them as well. Could very well be. I just know there are so many millions of golfers who play the game who want to play the equipment and the advances that they have. Hey, let's real quick. I noticed John Smoltz, Baseball Hall of Famer, one of the great pitchers I ever saw. He is he's into the final qualifying stage for the PGA Tour Champions. Five cards up for grabs this week, a weekend in Arizona. Smoltz is good, John. Bob, he can really play.
Yeah, he really can. But I'd be amazed if he gets in that top five because
I would
the guys,
too. Yeah, I would too.
The guys
yeah.
that he's competing against are really good also. What makes Smoltz different from the rest, as you alluded to, a Hall of Fame baseball player, which tells us right on the surface he's a hell of an athlete, and he's got hell of a hand-eye coordination, and he loves the game of golf. He's been playing it his entire professional baseball career whenever he got the opportunity. So all the ingredients are there. But it's push come to shove when only the top five make it.
I remember when the great John Brody, the quarterback for the 49ers, played on what was then the Senior Tour way back when, and he held his own pretty well. But yeah, the depth of that's out there. I agree. I would be surprised as well. I'm not surprised, having played a round of golf with Adam Long, I'm not surprised that he hit as many fairways as he did over three rounds in three PGA Tour events. He's, you know, and as good as he's been, he still has just conditional status going in next year, Bob, but some really cool stories from him having to do with Tiger and Phil. It was a real pleasure spending some time with him.
Yeah. I enjoyed talking to Adam Long and I think our listeners too, you know, you get to meet somebody that's not a superstar out mm-hmm. there, but he's down to earth, as our listeners will detect, when they listen to the interview. Very insightful. I have a lot of respect for Adam Long. He's the nuts and bolts of the PGA Tour. Yes, you got your superstars, but boy, if they didn't have the remaining cast of characters like Adam Long, there would be no PGA Tour.
And you'll hear from Adam Long right after these messages. William & Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitting inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to WilliamAndHarry.com.
We all aspire to outperform the player we were yesterday. The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X can help reward your best swings like never before. Both models are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, you know, I can't speak for you, but in the course of a round, if I hit 12 of 14 fairways, I'm a really happy guy. Our special guest today went way beyond being exceptional off the tee. But I got to tell you, the story of Adam Long goes far beyond the 69 consecutive fairways he hit to smash and set a new PGA Tour record. Adam Long, PGA Tour member, 69 straight. Welcome to Musings on Golf.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Looking forward to a nice conversation.
You know, it's amazing, Adam. It seems like you were born into the profession. I can't think of a better last name for a professional golfer than Long. And then you come along with your accuracy. So yeah. We got a winning combination. 2024 has the potential to be an outstanding year for Adam Long, and we'd like nothing more.
Unfortunately, not names can be deceiving. I think the Long is not so good, but the straight certainly is.
Have you?
Well, hey, Bob, before you ask a question, I played golf. We're taping this on November 30th. I played with Adam earlier today, and trust me, he hit a lot of long shots. What's your average driving distance and how it compares to the top leaders on tour?
Yeah, I'm probably in that 290, you know, low 290s. So that's definitely below average of tour. Not crazy below average, but it's definitely on the wrong side of that line, especially now with these up and comers. These kids are bombing it out there 310, 320 pretty regularly, but I gotta pick up my slack in the other parts of the game.
Let me ask you this, Adam. At when you were setting that record, which is an incredible record as far as I'm concerned, at what point did you start realizing that you had hit so many consecutive fairways? And were you aware that there was a PGA Tour record for that?
So I we're playing in Cabo, the Tigers course there at Diamante in Mexico. And you know, I played the first round, hit every fairway, but there were some other guys that did as well. The fairways are very generous at that course. The greens have a lot of action to them, but off the tee, it's pretty boring. And actually, in the practice round, one of my friends asked the group that we're playing with, do you think anybody's going to hit every fairway this week? And I said, no. I mean, I see why you're saying that, but it still seems pretty unlikely. There's bunkers. There's a few tricky tee shots, and, you know, the odds are just not very good. So I said no. And then we get through two rounds, and I think there was a tweet maybe that there were a couple of us or a handful of us that still had hit every fairway through two rounds. And then I'd known after three rounds, somebody had tweeted that I was the only one left, I believe, that hadn't missed a fairway yet. So I kind of knew going into that last day that I had a chance to do it for the whole tournament, which would have been really cool. And yeah. I did get through the whole day on Sunday, including 18, which ended up being an extremely awkward stance of a fairway bunker. The ball was only a couple feet away from going into the sand, but it was in the fairway. So after I hit my second shot on the 18, I told my caddy, I was like, I think that's all of them, right? He's like, yeah, I wasn't sure if you knew or not.
During the course of that round where you were perfect for the 4 days, were you thinking about it?
Yeah, I did know about it, but again, there weren't a whole lot of tees that really make you nervous. There are a few, you know, you got to thread in there a little bit, but I'd been driving it well all week, so I wasn't too worried about it, but you could definitely get, you know, a weird bouncer. You could definitely hit into a fairway bunker without even thinking. So it's definitely a little bit of luck involved, but I was the only one to do it. So still pretty cool. But then it did bleed over to Bermuda the next week, where then I started getting a lot more attention. People, caddies, players coming up to me and asking me what I was going to do, because I needed to hit the first fairway on Thursday to tie the record. and two hit the second fairway to beat the record, to set a new record. So I was fully aware of that going into the first round in Bermuda.
Hey, we're really pleased to be joined by PGA Tour player Adam Long here on Musings on Golf. We're going to get into your victory at the 2019 Desert Classic and a lot of things related to your time on the PGA Tour. But you were telling me that, you know, you've played a lot of different tours, right? And maybe kind of walk our listeners through that, as well as what you said has been kind of, you know, probably what you'll look back in hindsight of what's happened even since you joined the PGA Tour in 2019, kind of the craziness of it all.
Yeah, so I played collegiate golf at Duke and then turned professional after 4 years there, and played the mini tours for a few years, played the nationwide tour at the time, and played some more mini tours, then played 4 more years on the Korn Ferry Tour, and finally got my PGA Tour card when I was 30. So then in the last five and a half years, I've been playing on the PGA Tour. So, but yeah, like I said earlier, it's been a crazy the last 4 years, 3 years really, with COVID starting the chaos, if you will, with being shut down with that was just a bizarre time for all of us. And then the coming back from that, and how the tournaments were just so different. And then shortly, kind of when things were starting to get back to normal, that's kind of when this whole LIV Golf thing started and things just hit the fan again. And since then, the last year and a half has just been pretty chaotic, pretty crazy. And I, like I said, I think looking back in my career, whenever I'm done playing, I'll probably be on tour for the craziest 3 or 4 years that there ever will be on tour.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. You mentioned to me as well that you've got some friends who have joined LIV Golf and are playing over there. What are your thoughts about LIV Golf? Had you ever been approached? Do you follow it? Do you like it? Do you not like it? What do you think?
Yeah. I do have some friends that went. I never considered going. I didn't talk to LIV at all, but I probably could have it when it first started. You know, I think they would have taken pretty much anybody on the PGA Tour to get off the ground. But I've watched a little bit of it. Like I said, my friends that are over there, I don't blame them for going. I understand why they went, and I think they're pretty honest about why they went, and I totally get it. But I haven't been able to get into it that much. It's kind of tough to follow. I feel like everybody on the course at the same time and the teams, and it just seems very busy to me. And I guess I realized I'm a traditionalist at heart when it comes to golf, and I like the seriousness and the competitiveness of the PGA Tour and what it means, and I feel like it's LIV Golf is quite different from that, which you know, there's certainly a place for that in the game, but certainly not something that I entertained.
You did entertain a huge win as a rookie in 2019 at the Desert Classic, the old Bob Hope Desert Classic in Palm Springs. What was it like? So you beat Phil down the stretch. You ended up a shot ahead of Phil and Adam Hadwin. Adam, what was that like going down the stretch at the end and beating Phil Mickelson? And then please tell the story about your wife's reaction after you made the putt to clinch it.
Yeah, what a surreal day, a day that I hope I'll never forget. I try to remind myself of that day quite often. But, you know, going into the final round, I think I was 3 shots back of Phil Mickelson. So I think we all knew he was going to win. He's won 40 of these things before. And that's kind of how I approached it. I wanted to make sure I had a good time. And I didn't have, you know, I had rookie status on the PGA Tour. I wasn't in the next week at Torrey Pines, the Farmers. So I wanted a top 10. I wanted a good finish. I wanted to have a good day. I wasn't really thinking about winning. And, I think there's something to be said for that. But wanted to make sure I had a good time and stayed present. And that's kind of what I did. And it started out, I birdied the first 2 holes and Phil bogeyed the first. And all of a sudden it was like we were tied through three holes. And I, you know, okay, maybe, you know, this could go a different way. It was a nice, fun day playing with Phil. Obviously, is a legend of the game, a hero of mine, and Adam Hadwin, a great dude, similar age as me, and knew him from college golf. So that was a comfortable pairing with him. But started pretty loose and light, and then things got pretty tense towards the end when we were all pretty much bunched up there and tied in the last handful of holes coming in down the stretch. And there's some tricky holes out there, water everywhere it seems like, and coming down to 18, we're all tied up, and fortunately, I hit it to 13 feet and made a putt to win. And the story I was telling you earlier was I made a putt to win, It was over. Phil had already finished, but Adam Hadwin had a 2-foot putt left. But when my putt went in, I celebrated, and I kind of glanced over and I saw my wife running down the hill coming onto the green. And so I kind of like put my hands up like, no, wait. Like, you know, we still have Adam Hadwin's got this 2-3-foot putt, but it's a big difference between second and third. So let him have his time here. And so she's calling embarrassed, you know, and whatever. So Adam Hadwin taps in, we shake hands, it's all over. And we go do scoring and all the rest of it. Well, at dinner, we're kind of talking and we're having a nice laugh about my wife running out prematurely. And she's like, yeah, some Golf Channel guy came up to me and said, you know, he won, go celebrate on the green. And so, you know, Emily kind of still at that time, pretty new to certainly PGA Tour golf. And so she did what she was told by some random Golf Channel guy. So she runs out on the green. And so anyway, that was kind of it. That was the story of the night. And we talked about all kinds of stories of the day. Well, fast forward a couple of days, I'm at the Farmers at Torrey Pines, and Bones Mackay comes up and he says, Adam, I have to apologize to you. I sent your wife down onto the green when you made your putt because I thought it was over. I totally forgot about Adam Hadwin's putt. I'm like, wait, that was you? It was Bones is the one who sent my wife? And so I had to tell my wife that was not some random Golf Channel guy. That was a legend Hall of Famer there. But anyway, we've had a good laugh with Bones ever since.
Unbelievable stuff, Adam. You know, I'm going to pick your brain on one thing that I think will help our listeners. You know, the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour. The average person, I believe, thinks that the players on the Korn Ferry Tour are not as good as the people on the PGA Tour, and probably, you know, majority of them aren't. But the competition, as I see it, on that Korn Ferry Tour is really keen.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, having played 5 years on that tour and 5 years on the PGA Tour, I can attest that certainly the top of the Korn Ferry Tour is just as good as the top on the PGA Tour. I mean, they're right there. It's just there's not enough spots. There's not enough turnover, maybe. But if you're talking about the top few hundred players in the world, you know, the Korn Ferry guys are included in that. So, yeah, maybe down at the bottom, it's not quite as deep as the PGA Tour. I think that's clear, but certainly, you know, at least top to middle of the pack on the Korn Ferry Tour, and the scores that they're shooting on the Korn Ferry Tour, no joke. I mean, certainly the course is maybe a little easier, but it's not like they're playing pitch and putts. It's still long courses, and it's really competitive, and it's not changing. And you see it each year, rookies coming out and having immediate success on the PGA Tour. It's been a pretty clear proving ground for some of the PGA Tour's top talent.
Adam, Michael Block made a big name for himself at PGA Championship this year. As I understand it, you had a little match with him, and I was told he was only using just a sand wedge. Is that right?
Oh, boy. The story just keeps following me no matter how old I get. But, yeah, unfortunately for me, that one's true. I grew up in St. Louis, and his dad and my dad were good pals playing at, of course, Whitmore in St. Louis. And I was maybe only like 9 or 10, 11 years old while Mike Block was, you know, 21, 22, probably something like that. And he and my dad would have a lot of good gambling games around the club. But I only played with him a few times, but the most memorable, certainly a 3-hole match where Michael only used a sand wedge. I used all my clubs and he beat me. So, good moment for him. Not so good with me, but maybe it humbled me a little bit at a young age.
There you go. You can't beat that. What would you say is the strongest part of Adam Long's game?
You know, I've always kind of answered that with maybe not having a clear weakness. Pretty good in all areas of the game. This year particularly didn't hit my irons well, but as a bigger picture, I think I've had a pretty solid top to bottom game. You know, I lack in distance, but it hasn't held me back too much. You know, I think to be a top 10 player in the world, you probably need to have some serious distance, but you know, 36 years old and I'm more of a journeyman. So I kind of know my place, but I can definitely still compete on the PGA Tour. I have no question about that, but I think today's day and age, you do need the distance, but as far as clear weaknesses, I don't really see that I have them. Stats wise, always been a really good putter, so that's probably been my best stat over the last few years, and certainly now with the fairways, I guess I've always been pretty good at accurate too. But you know, I guess accuracy and putting has kept me in the game.
Speaking of putting, you have your choice of whatever golf ball you want to play with. I understand you do play the Titleist ball. One or two reasons why you picked Titleist?
You know, it's hard to argue with Titleist, right? They've had a pretty good track record over the years. I do believe every company now makes a really solid, good golf ball. I do think the separation that Titleist used to have is closing, and if not closed, it's gotten really, really tight at the top. But, you know, you see a lot of consistency in the Titleist ball, and it's been a nice piece of equipment for me.
All right, one last thing. Let me get my turn in. Just because you played golf with him today, you can't dominate Adam Long.
Yeah, but the problem is I didn't hit enough shots, and we ended up losing money, so I'm still a little sore about the whole experience, Bob.
Well, that's because his dad's a hustler. Don't worry about that.
That is true. Well, that is very true.
Adam, what's a typical week like for you on the PGA Tour? And actually, how do you balance tour life with having a wife and two young sons back home in Florida? That's got to be awfully difficult.
Yeah, it's been different over the years. I mean, you know, I've come from just on my own doing my own thing, and then all of a sudden I have a wife and two boys, and things definitely change. You get older, but I also gained a lot of experience, and I think my wife and I do a really good job of traveling together as a family a decent amount, as well as being on my own at the same time. I like both, honestly. Like, both are really good for me. Sometimes it's nice to be in my own little world and have my own schedule and come back from a round of golf and be in the hotel or the house or whatever and be super calm and quiet and be in my own world and on my own schedule. But it's also, I miss the family a lot. And so it's really nice to have them come out on the road and have some fun. And when the day's over of golf, the kids definitely don't care what I shot and can keep your mind away from the game. So I think we do a good balance of traveling some, but not all. And, It's a good mix, but a typical week for me on tour, I guess it depends if I've seen the course or not, but, you know, try to play maybe 9 holes on Monday or just practice a little bit, get a feel for the greens and things like that in my game, if that was a travel day. Tuesday is probably the biggest workload day. I spend the most time at the course on Tuesdays playing sometimes 18 holes or at least 9 holes and spending a lot of time practicing. And Wednesday is a 9-hole pro-am. So that's always a requirement. And then, as far as tournament days, pretty consistent, about the same, about an hour warm up and play. And then if I need to work on something afterwards, I will, but I'm also happy with just leaving right after too. But, you know, if I'm early, late, I typically spend the afternoon with a little bit of practice, but, try to keep it short once the tournament gets going.
We're taking our final swings, with Adam Long, PGA Tour member, who set the all-time record for most consecutive fairways hit with 69 earlier this year. You also, we talked a bit about this. You ended up playing with Tiger and Phil at the Zozo in 2020. And what likely will be the final time that those two will ever play together. And you told me a little thing about you and your caddy talking on Saturday about the potential to be paired with Tiger going into the final round. Tell our listeners about that again, please.
Anytime Tiger's in the tournament, it's a different feel. We all know it and say it's very clear that it's different. But that was one of the times when Tiger was in the field that I was playing, and it's just really cool. But he wasn't having a great week. I wasn't having a great week. But on Saturday, my caddy was like, man, we were kind of around the same position. And I wasn't playing with him, but he was around somewhere. And my caddy just kind of hypothetically said, you know, what would you be willing to do on 18 if you knew you'd be paired with Tiger? Like, would you miss a short putt? Would you make a quadruple bogey on purpose? And yeah. I was like, I don't know, that'd be hard. I don't know, maybe a 3-putt or something, you know. But
right.
So fast forward, we get to 18 and I hit it to maybe 25 feet and I hit it up there to a foot and tapped it in. And I was like, how'd that, what are we at? You know, he was paying attention. He's like, you're paired with him. And yeah. So that was a pretty cool feeling. And I get that text the night before, and I got the text that not only was I paired with Tiger, but I was playing with Phil Mickelson as well.
Right.
And so that was just a special day, though, to be on the first tee with those two and two legends, and to be a fly on the wall in that group was pretty remarkable. That one of those special days again that I'll never forget.
And what did you say to Phil as you were waiting for Tiger on the first tee?
Oh, yeah. I walked up to the tee and I said, you have any idea who our third is? He's like, oh, yeah. He likes to make a grand entrance. Don't worry. He'll be here.
That's Tiger.
Hey, 2011 U.S. Open at Congressional. Rory McIlroy ends up winning it. Just he had a lot of soft conditions, obviously, and set all kinds of records. But you had played some mini tours, but that really was your first event of any consequence at a big-time level. Man, what in the heck was that like standing on the 10th tee on that Thursday, that par three, with just different, you know, rows of people looking out over you? It had to be an experience unlike anything you've had in golf.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a moment for me. I was wide-eyed for sure. Pretty intimidating first tee shot of any tournament, let alone a U.S. Open, but wasn't quite ready for that one. But I did make par in the first two holes and settled in nicely. But very cool to have a U.S. Open experience like that at Congressional. Huge clubhouse, obviously, right there by the 10th tee. And pretty eye-opening for me experience, but I learned a heck of a lot. And I think that was a big springboard for the rest of my career.
All right, three final questions for me. We're going to do this in rapid-fire order. If you could play only one golf course for the rest of your life, which course would it be?
Pebble Beach, for sure. I mean, that place is just the best. And I think you can play there every day, and it's special every single time.
Okay. Who would be the other three in your dream foursome, whether they're alive or deceased?
That's always a tough one. I feel like my answer has changed over the years, but now with having two boys, I have to throw those two guys in there. And my dad, I think that the four of us would be a pretty nice group. I need my one-year-old to grow up maybe just a little bit. So if we could fast forward that.
Final question for me before I turn it over to Bob to wrap it up. If you were the commissioner of the PGA Tour for a day, what one big change would you, Adam Long, make?
Wow. What a time to have that question thrown at you.
Yeah.
Be nice to see something consistent for a while. Things have changed. It seems like every year since I've been on tour, things keep changing pretty quickly. And there's a lot of turmoil and changeover and scheduling and tournaments and status. And it's just been a lot. So I'd just try to make something concrete there that would last a long time. But my biggest probably knack right now is probably not having any cuts in some of these elevated events next or signature events next year. I know a few of them will with the player host tournaments, but even those are going to be 70 to, you know, cut to 50 kind of thing. So I don't know. I just like the bigger fields and a real cut.
Well, those are three pretty good suggestions. I would say that. And I know we're running out of time, but since you shared so much about Tiger, I think it's only fitting I share with you a story that you'll find interesting about Tiger. He used to host his tournament in California every year, and Janice, the producer and partner, we would cover it. And one year I had to be in the hospital back on Long Island for a routine examination, so I didn't go to the tournament. Tiger sees Janice. He says, "Where's Bob?" Janice said, "Well, Tiger, he couldn't make it this year. He's in the hospital, routine examination, but you know, he's perfectly fine." Tiger said, "Get him on the phone." So I'm laying in the hospital in New York. Phone rings. I say, "Hello." He says, "How you doing, man?" I said, "Who's this?" He says, "How you doing, man?" I said, "Who is this?" He said, "It's Tiger." I said, "Tiger, you trying to give me a heart attack?" He said, "No, I just wanted to check up, make sure you're all right." I said, "Thanks. Really appreciate it." And I hang up and I say to the nurse, that was Tiger Woods on the phone. She turns and bolts out of the room. Within a minute, Adam, in comes a doctor. He said, "Mr. Bubka, the nurse thinks you're delusional."
Yeah, I do too.
I know, but it did happen. Hey, thanks for being with us, Adam.
Hey, Adam, real quick, what did you guys talk about that day when you played with Phil and Tiger?
You know, I mostly listen to those guys. I talked to both of them a fair amount as well, but those two obviously go way back, and it was just it really interesting to hear them talk about. Phil was just kind of starting the Champions Tour, so Tiger was needling him a little bit about that, but also seemed like he was curious about it. But I don't remember anything that was like you know, revolutionary. It was just kind of more casual talk here and there. You know, you could tell that they were friends, but they weren't close. You could tell it was a little, yeah, not forced. Forced isn't the right answer, but it just wasn't natural. It wasn't like a close relationship. You could tell there was some splinter there, but totally fine. It was just, you know, it wasn't totally like him and maybe JT nowadays would be, you know, but you know, just the normal stuff. But probably the funniest thing that for me in that day was I told you today, but on the second hole, I think Tiger and I both had about 10 feet and Tiger looks to me kind of while Phil's putting or getting ready to putt. He's like, who's next, me or you? I'm like, deer in headlights. I'm like, me, I'll go. I'll take it. You just take your time, sir. Whatever you want. You know, it's like, oh, I throw me on the spot. But that was just such an awesome day.
Well, it's been an awesome time. Adam Long, thank you so much for joining us on Musings on Golf.
Thank you, guys. Enjoyed it.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert. And the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Yeah, Bob, I enjoyed that conversation. I hope our listeners did too with Adam Long. I played a lot of golf with his dad here, and he's very similar in mannerisms to his dad. Really upbeat guy, very likable guy. He's the kind of guy, by the way, I think he could be someone who maybe does some work on Golf Channel. I think he's sharp, Duke graduate. I won't hold that against him. But he is, as you said, he's kind of the backbone in many ways to the PGA Tour, isn't he?
And speaking of backbone, boy, we got a couple of interviews on the horizon that I know our listeners are going to enjoy.
Yeah, Susie Whaley, the past president of the PGA of America, really has been a great golf ambassador, is going to be joining us in the next couple of weeks, as is her fellow PGA professional, Renee Powell. You talked about a great ambassador to the game and the daughter of a gentleman who overcame unbelievable barriers just to build an incredible golf course in Ohio. So Susie Whaley, Renee Powell, on the list down the road. But for right now, for Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off, Musings on Golf.